For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Yes, sir. Off and rolling Thursday, May 23rd, 2024 is the date. It's time. Welcome into you to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. Joining me, alongside me, is the executive producer for the next 2 days.
Let's go.
It's Brad Carson. Brad Carson on X at Brad Carson. Brad.
What's happening?
Good to hear from you, brother.
The big man and the big show. It's good to be here, Gabe Kuhn.
I got
to
say, we have a lot of sponsorship garb on today in the studio. I know. We don't have video out there. You just hear our voices, but you got the Oxbow hat on.
Got the Oxbow hat on.
You have some Grizzlies gear on.
That's nice.
And I have my old Dominic gear on,
well,
too.
The deal with the overshirt for the Grizzlies is it's cold as hell usually in here. So I have – you're not cold. Is it because of that lineman in you? You just don't get cold?
I prefer – if I had my house – turned down to what I wanted it to.
Oh, you'd have it cooler than it is.
65.
Oh wow, you're like me.
When you get into a hotel room, do you crank that thing down? I crank it down to as low as it can possibly.
I like it low. And my wife is actually generally happy with my temperature. So yeah, and the temperature of our rooms.
Yeah,
yeah. So
my wife's not the same way.
Yeah,
she's anemic.
She likes
you know. Yeah. I guess I keep the house warm with my body heat. Well, I guess that's how it works.
Hey, you're a newlywed still, nonetheless. So yeah, it's good to be back in the studio with you at this daytime, but it's been a year or so since I did this on the regular for a couple of days in the row.
Yeah, now, May 23rd, I do have to give a shout out to a goat. Turns 33 today.
Who's that?
My brother Alex Kuhn.
Hey,
how about that?
Alex
Happy
Kuhn.
Birthday.
Gotta get
out
my
there.
Applause. Yeah, yeah. Alex Kuhn, for those that don't know, also a radio star.
And at an Odyssey station as well. 670
Chicago.
The score.
Yeah,
baby.
He works in Chicago. Yes. There's the applause. So,
yes.
Alex, if you're listening on the podcast or on the Odyssey app in Chicago, appreciate you and happy birthday.
Yeah, we have a...
He's younger than you.
No, he's older than me.
Older than you. He's the older
he's
brother.
He's 33. So, you know,
that's right. You're 30.
I just turned 29.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Four years
you
my
act
older.
Older than him, though, don't you?
I mean,
I'm not trying to be a jack.
That's up to y'all. That's up to you.
I don't know Alex that well, but I'm just guessing.
It's your judgment.
See what I see on social media from y'all.
Yeah, it's your judgment. No, I will say we're a broadcast journalist-ass family. I'll tell you that right
Yeah, you got
now.
Your hands full.
Good God, yeah. A lot of journalism degrees in my family. My dad, me, and my brother.
I talked to you. Your dad can hold his own up there. I watched him hold court at your wedding reception. He had that microphone.
Good talker.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Although his first line out of his mouth at that wedding reception was, "My mom was up there." He's like, "I have Diane up here, so if I say anything stupid, she can slap me." So yeah, that was his first line.
She held off.
Yeah, we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're gonna pass you off at 7 o'clock
to game two
of the Eastern Conference Finals. Pacers visiting the Celtics after a game one that it felt like the Pacers should have had.
Yep.
But we'll see how game two goes. They need to try to steal one on the road if they want any chance of winning the series. I know that I've counted the Pacers out even before the series started, but we are where we are, 1-0.
Apparently Rick Carlisle
Celtics.
Did too.
And also, it is 1-0 Mavs on the road.
Yeah.
They go in to Minnesota.
Got it done.
And win a damn ball game behind 63 combined points from their two superstars in Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. And they played relatively good defense. I was impressed with what they were able to accomplish last night. That was very, very impressive from the Dallas Mavericks. Also, throughout the show, I'm going to have to discuss the House for NCAA case. For those that don't know, the antitrust case that could lead to revenue sharing in the NCAA and for football and for the big sports, it's caught a little bit of a snag. There's this case from a former Colorado player, Alex Fontenot. Now, he was the running back on the last good team, really, at Colorado under Mike McIntyre. Sefo Lufau was a quarterback, all these different guys. They had a really good defensive backfield. They won 10 games, but he was the running back. He has a case in the state of Colorado federal court that he does not want lumped in to the House case, and it looks like a judge has denied the motion by the NCAA to try to lump in that Fontenot case, and that's a little bit of a snag that I will try to talk you through here in just a moment. We'll have some NFL news as well on the show. Aaron Rodgers keeps talking. Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid were asked about Harrison Butker. Those are not fun questions.
I saw some of these quotes.
And by the way, I know that the Chiefs certainly have to answer for their kid.
Sure.
Did you see yesterday reporters asked Mike McDaniel, the head coach of the Dolphins, what he thought of Harrison Butker?
I didn't get those quotes.
All he said was, "Thank you so much for asking me," and like banged his hand. "I appreciate you for asking," and then he didn't give an answer.
Of course.
So, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. We get to small talk around 5:50. The Blitz will be at 6:30. There's some weight loss stories in the one in the NBA, one here in Memphis for Memphis basketball that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, I could learn something from the two guys we'll be discussing.
You're
right?
Fine.
And then Charles Barkley on Inside the NBA went after a lot of people in the WNBA.
Yeah.
He says that the women in the WNBA are being petty toward Caitlin Clark. Do I agree? Do I not agree? I think there's always some middle ground that we need to find. But I will say this, Charles Barkley, now that he knows he has nothing to lose and last year will likely be the last year of Inside the NBA, he might be the best entertainer in sports.
He's ripped
forward.
The Band-Aid
he
off here at the
care.
End. No, he doesn't give an S.
Kenny
he ripped
Smith,
his bosses. He's killing everybody.
Did you see the moment last night where Kenny Smith went through this long, drawn-out conversation about the games that they were watching and, you know, how the Mavs can get over top and all these different things. And as soon as Kenny Smith finished, Charles Barkley goes, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life." It's like, yeah, he doesn't care anymore.
Doesn't care.
He knows what's going to happen with that show. He knows he's going to be a free agent. He's just letting it all hang out. As far as guests are concerned, we're going to be loaded today as well. 4:30, Jonah Dillon will join bottom of this hour from the Commercial Appeal. It covers Memphis football and the Grizzlies. We'll cover mostly Memphis football with all of the different additions.
Yeah. They're loaded up on this transfer portal, Gabe.
And I do get a kick out of like every video that comes out for the commitment videos. The first thing you see is a FedEx plane.
I enjoy
off.
The video.
And then there's this quote, FedEx quote tweeted the commitment yesterday from a cornerback from Indiana who was all Big Ten honorable mention and just gave the eyeballs. So that relationship in the NIL realm is working
together.
Out very well so far.
In this case, they stole it from the land of UPS, Indiana.
Yes, they sure did.
They just took it right
Good
out.
Good point.
Big Brown can do for you. How about what we can do at FedEx?
Yes. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join. From the Daily Memphis, he's a columnist there. Also, the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Then 6 o'clock, very pleased that he can carve out a little bit of time. But he's from Boardroom. His name's Eddie Gonzalez.
Oh, it's good to have Eddie
And Boardroom, for those that don't know, is the media arm of Kevin Durant and his agent that he's had for a long time, Rich Kleiman. And Eddie has done a lot of work with Kevin Durant over the years in trying to facilitate
he's
podcasts
really
and everything else. So we'll have an NBA conversation at about 6 o'clock with Eddie. Now, I want to start with the Western Conference Finals last night. Timberwolves get outmanned by the Mavericks. The Mavericks are up 1-2-0 after a 108-105 win. And what it came down to is the Mavs have two superstars to the Timberwolves seeming one, and those two superstars showed up like you wouldn't believe. Luka Doncic, 33 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 12 for 26 from the field. Kyrie Irving, 30 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. 12 for 23 from the field. They came out. Kyrie knew that he had to bring some scoring punch as opposed to the series before with the Thunder, where he played a lot of defense, and they combined for 63 total points. Now, where did the Mavs outside of that make up the ground that they seemingly lost because of the Timberwolves' physicality and everything else? What they did in the paint was phenomenal. Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively were great. And when you look at the Mavs against the Wolves, you would think, okay, Wolves have Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert, they have Karl Anthony Towns, they have these big hulking bodies. They should win. Anthony Edwards can really attack the paint when he wants to. They should win that points in the paint category every single night against this Mavericks team. They didn't. They got their ass kicked in that regard. They got beat 62-38 by the Mavs in the paint. That's something that if the Timberwolves want to control this series, want to win this series, they cannot let that happen again. But here's the thing. When you talk about a team like the Timberwolves having to go through the Nuggets, the reigning champs in seven games, having had to go through one of the super teams we have in this league and the Suns, you get the home court advantage that you've been hoping for a long, long time. And as soon as you get there, you give up home court advantage immediately by losing on your home court to the Dallas Mavericks. But I have to tip the cap to the Dallas Mavericks. This is a series that I think a lot of people thought they'd be outmanned in, especially in the paint, and they showed first game that's not going to be the case.
I loved this game because it proves everything wrong that a lot of people thought about it last year. And then I saw the quotes from Chris Finch after the film session today. He says, "It was a rough film session. I told the guys, it's been a long time since I've been this disappointed in your effort, your performance, your attitude, your application and attention to detail."
Jeez.
The Western Conference Finals started. Not sure if they got the memo, but they got it this afternoon. And I think that the team forgot that their coach is the one that's hurt, not them.
You know,
like, it was brutally bad.
Yeah,
I think that they can do better than this.
100%. And I thought Anthony Edwards was just not good last night.
He was not good.
He wasn't,
and he should have shut up before the series talking about, you know, guarding Kyrie, because
yes,
he got his ass handed
to
him.
Of course he did. And, like, I don't know what they're going to do to go guard those two guys going into the future.
That's
but
tough.
Whatever they did last night, they're going to have to adjust.
And you can't double team both of them. So,
and Anthony Edwards offensively just didn't quite have it how I expected him to.
Nope.
He got his teammates involved, but it just didn't look how it has looked, when, especially when Mike Conley's been on the floor with him. He only had 19 points, 6 for 16 from the field.
Well, and those role players didn't play for Minnesota. You know, Nas didn't play that great. And then you got, you know, like Derrick Jones Jr. played well on the wing.
Yep.
I mean, they've got good play, and they're long. Gafford is tall.
What I noticed about Anthony Edwards' game last night, he wasn't attacking the rim, attacking closeouts, trying to get into the paint like he should have.
Yeah.
He usually gets a fair amount of points inside the three-point arc. 12 of his 16 shots were from three last night.
Yeah.
That's not his game all the way. Yes, he can knock down threes at a high clip, but he should not be taking 12 of them in any particular game. And what's most impressive about this Mavs win, not only did they beat them, the Timberwolves, who have just these hulking bodies, these physical guys, three separate centers who can really get after you, and they beat them in paint scoring. The Mavs did.
Yeah.
Mavs only had 6 three-pointers last night. Only made 6 of 25. They didn't even attempt
They had a plan. They had a plan.
They had a plan, and they were trying to bring the fight to the Timberwolves to show, hey, we can match the physicality that these other teams have yet to do with you.
I think they can take advantage of Mike Conley, though. I mean, Mike had a rough game.
Yes. Weirdly enough, it wasn't as, like, I don't know. I don't think he, obviously the stats will tell you one thing, but I think when you go look and break down his plus-minus numbers, his on-off numbers, they were still a better team when he was on the floor.
Plus one. Yeah, I mean, he had 6 points, 31 minutes. He was 1 of 6 from three.
I just thought their two scoring punches in their starting lineup didn't show up.
He also missed those pretty critical free throws at the end of the game.
True, but Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards combining for 12 for 36 from the field, that does not help you in any way, shape, or form.
That's fair.
Like, that's the problem, and I don't think that's going to hold. I think one of them, or if not both of them, will show up for game 2, game 3, game 4. But that was something that really hampered and hindered what the Timberwolves could do last night.
Yeah. And you're at home. Like,
yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah. Did you see the So we know the famous thing now going for the Timberwolves is the bring your ass.
Yes.
The bring your ass deal that Anthony Edwards said to Chuck on Inside the NBA when Chuck said, I haven't been to Minnesota in a long time. He said, well, bring your ass. Have you seen all the things that
they're
the
doing
state
proclamations?
Of Minnesota?
Yes.
They have a proclamation the governor wrote out, right?
It's like a document for Congress.
And
it's
then did
ridiculous.
You see what? There's a site now, bringyass.com.
Oh, wonderful.
Bringyass.com. But it's not just, it's not normal. It redirects you to a certain. To a certain tourism.
It goes
to the Minnesota tourism site, which I thought was kind of funny in itself.
Bringyass.com
will redirect you to be
official
a Minnesota tourist.
Tourism website.
Yes.
Here's what Chuck said. I have not been to Minnesota in probably 20 years.
Yes. Yeah.
That's on the little Bleacher Report thing. That's crazy.
I think also, too, looking at the Western Conference versus the Eastern Conference, this keeps popping up for me.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference, that game was so badly played. It was close, got to overtime. It became fun, but it became fun because both teams were making a crazy amount of mistakes. I thought last night, looking at the Western Conference, not a whole lot of mistakes. Relatively cleanly played ball game, but there were forced mistakes by each team. If they were making mistakes, the other team forced them. Whereas I think there was a lot of unforced errors in that Eastern Conference matchup. I thought that game last night was phenomenally played, very well competed.
The late execution from the Timberwolves struck me. Not just the rim, the cat play where he interfered, but like the execution from Mike, the three, they just get fouled, not making the foul shot. They could have done a better job at the end of closing.
Sure,
they had a chance there. I mean, this was close.
Sure, but we're talking about a game we're comparing it to in the Eastern Conference where there was
disaster.
There was five turnovers in the last five thirty. They had more turnovers, the Pacers did, than field goals made in the overtime period.
I will say this. Love the Western Conference way more than this.
And I
love the game that's going to be on tonight, but it's not close.
Yes, but I wonder what happens tonight because I thought the Celtics, they're 3-0. Moving on to this game. They're 3-0 in game ones, including their game one on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And they're 0-2 in game twos in these playoffs.
They're saying I'm the Hex
with
my
bet. But I do think, and I talked about this yesterday with Connor, Brad, I thought they saved their bad performance for game one. Like their mistake-ridden, we're going to take too many threes performance for game one. It feels like game two they may right that ship. But it feels like also the Celtics, sometimes they need to get down in a game, get punched around a little bit to realize that they can lose because the Eastern Conference is not good enough, and I feel like sometimes they play that way.
Yeah. Well, so like tonight's over-under for Jason Tatum is 30.5 points.
Oh, speaking of which, we have some Fade Brad picks, right?
Yeah, that was my popper, the little bonus side piece. Do you think Tatum will score that tonight and go over 30.5 for my teaser?
I don't know.
I think if Boston's going to win,
he had 36 in game one.
Yeah, I mean, the line on this game is 9.5, so they're expected to play. I think that the Pacers, just kind of going back to game one, they lost the series in game one.
Isn't that an interesting thing you just said, though, that I think a lot of people echo? People say, well, Jason Tatum needs to have a better game.
He does.
For them to win game two. Do you realize, when you look at his final stat line from game one, 36 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and he was a plus 20 when he was on the floor.
Well, it's because he missed so much from three.
Listen, I don't disagree with your sentiment.
Yes. No, that tells you everything about Tatum, doesn't it?
But it's just like it always feels like there's something amiss with him where it's like the consistency and when he's out on the floor, he makes things easy for opposing defenses. The way I put it yesterday is it feels like he allows people to guard him when he really is an unguardable force out there. When he goes and attacks the rim and doesn't settle for threes and doesn't settle for fall-away jumpers, if he goes and attacks the rim, he's a different player altogether. That's where you get the 40-point games from him is when he brings that aggression immediately. But like even in that 36-point, 12-rebound, 4-assist, 3-steal performance where he's a plus 20, you're sitting there and you're like, damn, man, this could be so much better. You make it easy on the other team to defend you.
He did it in overtime, though. That's the thing. Like he waited till overtime, and then it was like, wow, there's the guy.
But here's the other thing about that is like you want to give the thing we've been missing with Jason Tatum is ultimately we want to see him get it done in those big moments, right? We want to see him really show up in the massive moments, and he kind of did that in game one, right? He had 10 points in an overtime period. That's the most any player has had in a playoff game in an overtime period since 2021, and you give him credit for that. But the difference is he's doing it to get past Andrew Nimhard, TJ McConnell, and Aaron Nesmith.
Right.
Like, that's the difference. It's like, I want to see you do that against this. And obviously, you can't control who you're playing.
You're going to get to see it in the
Eastern Conference Finals. But, like, in the finals, I need to see a performance like that if you get to an overtime period.
Yeah, I like Tatum. I was just reading, he scored at least 33 points in three of his last four games. Like, so
the over 30 seems nice. The over 30 and a half seems nice, but I don't know. I don't know what type of Tatum we're going to
see. The challenge he has, I think Jason brought this up, like, on that team, you've got two really good players that have to share the ball a lot, and it's like when they get down to crunch time, you just like it doesn't always have to be Tatum, and it wasn't in game one. We saw it there at the end of regulation.
All right, now all NBA teams were published. First team: Giannis, Luka, SGA, Jokic, Jason Tatum. No issue at all. Think that would be sort of top five MVP voting if I'm just looking at it on its surface. That's fine. Second team, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, and Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard on the second team kind of gives me a little bit of hesitation. And I know it's regular season, but he didn't play in the playoffs. And I know he played a fair amount of games this year, but he barely met that 65-game requirement. And
LeBron James should be in that slot.
Yeah, I agree. What we saw last, him not playing in the playoffs, really hampers my mind. And again, I know it's regular season. And then third team, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Tyrese Halliburton, LeBron James, and Domantas Sabonis. LeBron is who I want to focus on here before I get to the contract part of this thing. He's the first player to be an All-NBA selection 20 freaking times.
That's crazy.
And he's also, this is probably the most jarring stat for me, youngest and oldest selection to the All-NBA of all time.
Is that right?
2005, in his second year, he was 20 years old. Now at 39, in 2024, he's the oldest selection.
Wow.
Like, I know that people get caught up in these GOAT debates, and they try to take things away from LeBron, take things away from Jordan, take things away from Kobe to lift up another, and I get that. But I'm not talking about any of that right now. The longevity and the ability and the guy that, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's 39 who is going to be 40 next year, and I will slot him in for 26-7-7 as his stat line averages next year.
I mean,
we've never freaking seen that, and we need to admit that. That needs to be admitted all around, across the board.
Even, and I know you said we can't bring up the GOAT debate, but I will say this. He's a better older player, clearly, than Jordan was.
He's a better older player than anybody in the history of the
NBA. Ever. That's not close.
I mean, like,
it's not close.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar made it to year 21.
Right.
Right? But he was averaging, you know, 9 points, four rebounds.
He was a role player.
He couldn't move well anymore.
He
like, the longevity, and I know we could talk about modern medicine, but even with modern medicine, it's hard to be this damn good in year 21. We can all admit that.
Yeah.
Now, the contract possibilities, Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton, because they're on the All-NBA team, are now eligible for five-year, $243 million deals.
Oh my God. the money is nuts.
Let's see. Luka Doncic, in 2025, will have a chance to sign the largest contract in NBA history. That one is 5 years, $346 million. Mm. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has the ability in 2025 to sign the largest per-year contract in the history of the NBA, 4 years, $294 million. And in 2030, 2031, he could make $81.4 million, which would be the first year in NBA history where a single player has made $80-plus million.
$80 million. Who was that? Was that
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander? Yep.
Is he that good?
I think he's very, very good. Yes.
Is Shea Gilgeous-Alexander worth $80 million a year?
Yes. Yes. Well, okay.
Gabe
Kuhn.
Okay,
the different discussion. See, you're worth what they pay you. You're worth what your Supermax contract is. You have to pay him that, so therefore he's worth it.
Look at the players on that
list. What, are you going to skip up and not pay him that? No.
No, I didn't say that. Hey,
you're worth what they pay you.
No, I get it.
You're worth what they pay you. You're worth what that Supermax and Max Extension tells you you're worth, and that's 35% of the payroll, of the salary cap.
Giannis is worth that. Luka's worth that.
I think SGA's, I mean, if you're going to put those two in that category, I guess SGA's right there as a young player still. Why not? Well, I mean, what has he done wrong to keep you off of that?
There's
30 points per game,
the second
seven assists.
I'd pay Anthony Edwards that before I pay him that.
Sure, but you're either way.
I know.
SGA's getting paid that, and that's the end of the day,
I
and
got
all
it.
Be all. Now,
I got it.
With the new
I'm not taking his money.
With the new
He's getting his
TV
money.
Deals, too.
Yeah.
Keith Smith, who I bring on the show, was talking.
Front office show.
Yeah, front office show and spot track. And yeah, he does a really good job. The reason I bring him on and Trevor Lane from the front office show is they know more about the way the money moves in the NBA than I could ever understand.
They're really good on
the soft salary cap system really breaks my mind at times. They help me out with that. But with the new $7 billion deal that's about to be signed, TV deal, this is going to help the players even more. He was projecting that by the time we get to 2028-29, if we go up 10% every single year because of that $7 billion in the TV revenue, 10% on the salary cap, and you get to that $200 million sort of salary cap number, he says that a Supermax contract at that point would be 5 years, $419 million.
So those contracts are worth 90 to 100, like they're worth almost
final
like,
year,
like
91 million dollars.
$90 million contract.
It is insane. There's no middle class now in the NBA.
No.
It is almost, it feels like you're a minimum or you are a max player. That's sort of where we're at this particular moment.
Well, I guess locking in these dudes is what you had to do if you're the Grizzlies. I mean, you get them earlier because it's only going to go through the roof.
Yeah, but the luxury tax implications of the new CBA just make it so harder, and it creates a lot of parity year to year. And you have to figure out how to surround those guys before it's too late.
Well, and it's hard to keep two or three of these dudes.
Yep.
You know, now, you can have one.
J.B. Bickerstaff fired. I can tell you right now, I don't like that. I think it's a bad decision. I think that's a terrible decision by the Cavs, and I'll say why, because I think 170 and 159, after the John Beilein disgrace where we had the slugs versus thugs debate, but that's why John Beilein was fired by the Cavs. But he's good. He's a good coach, and he's done a good job. He got the ship right after the John Beilein situation, got the team to the second round, takes a game from Boston before the entire team went completely injured and limp, and he gets fired. And I don't even think if they were at full strength this year, they had a chance to beat the Celtics. I just think it's an unfair firing. The amount of scapegoating we do in the NBA in the coaching realm is ridiculous, and it goes back to our previous conversation. The reason that is because these players are getting paid astronomical amounts of money while the coaches still sit around $5 million, $6 million a year, where, you know, his star player, Donovan Mitchell, could be upwards of $60 million owed the next couple of years, depending on what this contract looks like.
They just turn these guys over. It's like a recycling bin. Although, in this case, it'll be interesting if J.J. Redick gets this job and they replace him with a guy like J.J. Redick. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think J.J. Redick would be better suited to take the Cavs job than the Lakers job, but it feels like the Lakers are very involved in trying to get him.
What about Borrego's in there?
So the two guys that they brought up, Shams brought up, were Kenny Atkinson, who's the Warriors' assistant, and then Pelicans' associate head coach, James Borrego.
Okay.
Either one.
It's the same dudes. They're all the same. They just turn them out.
If they stink, they fire them.
Yeah, they go from the Charlotte Hornets to the bench in New Orleans to taking the coach for the Cavs.
And also, the other thing about the Cavs, you never had a chance to beat the Celtics even at full strength. But I think also part of it is your roster was just weirdly made up. You have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen trying to fight for their role on that team, and you had Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell trying to fight for their role on that team. You had a bunch of power struggles with four of your five starters.
Yeah, I mean, the guard one is the one that sticks out. I don't think you can have enough fives, but the guard is the one. Garland's going to get out of that deal.
Yep. Now, Jonah Dillon will join in just a moment, but I have to go through this. The Big 12, ACC, Big 10 have all approved a settlement in the landmark House versus NCAA case. And that settlement, of course, is approving the $2.8 billion settlement in back pay and damages to players that did not get NIL money. And, of course, this settlement is supposed to move us down the path to revenue sharing in the Power Four. So the Big 12, ACC, Big 10 have all done that. Now, as of yesterday, as of last night, Brad, the NCAA board has approved it. And I have to take 1 second to revel in this moment. Not that I think that this settlement by House NCAA is going to make everything perfect. It's going to complicate things further, and we're going to have to figure things out. I understand that. But I have to revel in the fact that the NCAA has agreed to a $2.8 billion settlement on a case which the big hulking idea is you cannot limit what players can make on the open market. And now the NCAA board is approving a settlement where each school can pay the players using revenue sharing. So the money that the players help produce is finally going to go to lining their pockets, and the NCAA agreed to that settlement. Like, that is an insane step in the grand scheme of where we have been with the NCAA all these years. They're finally agreeing to, hey, you helped produce this money, you should get some of that money. That is an escape from anything they've ever done in their past.
Is there part of you that's sad about this, given that your career didn't end too long ago?
There's part of me that wants to hit up a lawyer and say, hey, where's my back pay? I think most of it's Power Four athletes, though, the way I'm reading through it.
Oh, it's not going to be dudes at Memphis?
I think it could be.
So if you're at Memphis, you're just hoping to get your check from FedEx or from whatever.
I don't know what it looks like. I have yet to find somebody smart enough to let me know how that would work.
This whole thing is going to get really complicated in a hurry.
Of course.
It's going to get more complicated.
And it is complicated already now because we have those four entities, three of the Power Five conferences and the NCAA board approving this. And there's a case now, another antitrust case in the state of Colorado, which is in the federal court of Colorado, called it's Fontenot versus NCAA. And Alex Fontenot was a running back on the Colorado team way back in the day. Not way back in the day, but 2017, 2018. And attorneys in the Fontenot versus NCAA case, they'd like their case to stay in the federal court of Colorado instead of being moved to California and combined with the House versus NCAA case, antitrust case. And they actually won that today. The court denied the House NCAA case from adding Fontenot versus NCAA. And their legal team, which is led by Garrett Brochui, who is a former Mizzou baseball player, also won the class action suit against the Major League Baseball to get minor leaguers.
$185 million situation and all that.
But their legal team said that they won't know whether their claims would be covered by the settlement, the House versus NCAA settlement, until they have all the details of the proposal ultimately. But that happened today, and they're not going to be added to the House versus NCAA. And I guess they're going to argue that none of the cases with House NCAA or all the other cases, they say that they're not covering the main point of emphasis in their particular case of Fontenot. They define their cause as focusing on what would be the true market free market value of services being provided by these athletes. They'll argue that Carter versus NCAA is only about basketball and football. They'll argue that House only focuses on NIL. I'll say this. This complaint didn't really seem to scare the House versus NCAA attorneys, Jeffrey Kessler, Steve Berman, those big names.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that Fontenot versus NCAA has successfully pissed them off in the process.
Man, this guy's, are not going to be happy with this cat. I mean, he was a tailback for Colorado. Like, I don't even remember him.
Yeah. The other part of the oncoming, like the Fontenot case, is if they're finding the true free market value of athletes, which is their main goal, do they think that the settlement that House NCAA, do they think that that suffice? $2.8 billion, I don't think that's their issue. That should not be too much of an issue. That seems like fair market value for what we've been dealing with.
Yeah.
But there are other terms, and I was looking through like some of these.
You got these in front of you here?
There's one term that really threw me off about the House NCAA settlement that I think is something worth noting. Including all current Division I athletes, which is what House NCAA is about.
Softball, baseball, everything.
All Division I athletes that are current right now. Upon the settlement of House versus NCAA, which would be, you know, months from now, years, whatever it is, you would not be able to engage the NCAA as a current student athlete on an antitrust lawsuit claim or a claim ever again. You cannot go after the NCAA ever again.
And they want that.
If House versus NCAA and that settlement goes through, which I think is kind of strange. Now, you'd have to opt out of the team, opt out of the settlement to then go and put your antitrust claim on the NCAA. So there's still avenues you could do that as a current athlete. But you would be lumped into this category no matter what, where you would not be able to file an antitrust claim against the NCAA ever again.
That's a big one for
them. That's huge, right?
That's big for the NCAA.
That's huge for the NCAA. But at the same time, if you're a student athlete, if you're a lawyer, and you're representing Alex Fontenot, for example, do you think that that's the way you should go about this thing.
But this is like,
there's going to be more cases as we get down this road.
But this is
we're
like,
gonna have the employer-employee thing coming up. There's probably more complaints that could be filed, and the NCAA is trying to nip that in the bud.
That's true. It's sort of like, though, when you play at Topgolf and you have to sign a waiver and it says no hold harm. Like, it's sort of like, it's that vibe. And that's why they do that. They do that for a reason.
They do that because they don't want to have to deal with
no more lawsuits. This is our final offer.
I get it, but it's...
That's actually bigger than the money. Like, you'll pay the money. You want that more than the money.
Exactly.
We'll pay the $2 billion now.
Which is
let's
why
just be
I
done
think the
this.
Fontenot, the right. Fontenot,
he's
lawyers,
in good shape.
They're saying $2.8 billion. That's fine, probably for the most part.
Right.
But to say I can't go after them for an antitrust claim ever again, that seems like a step a little bit too far, because there's going to be more where this comes from. There's going to be more things that pop up along the way, and I think we can all admit that. So we'll see. We'll see. But let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll bring on Jonah Dillon coming up next. We'll talk some Memphis football.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
On the other side. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now via the phone line is Jonah Dillon. He covers Tigers football and a little bit of Grizzlies for the Commercial Appeal. He's on X at the Jonah Dillon. Jonah, how's Murfreesboro treating you?
It's rainy. We've been in a long weather delay. There was a long weather delay yesterday. I sat there almost 3 hours waiting for about 5 outs of a baseball game to be played. Mm. And now... guess what? We've got another weather delay.
So, yeah. Well, like I said earlier,
it's been a lot of waiting.
Like I said earlier when we were texting, Godspeed. Godspeed. Eventually, they'll clear off the field. They'll get playing, but we don't know when that'll be. Now, I want to get into a lot of Tiger football here, because this recruiting class they put together in the transfer portal in 2024 is quite something. Yesterday, they end up with Kobe Miner, who was a cornerback from Indiana. He was a All Big Ten honorable mention selection a couple years ago. And then you look at Elijah Herring and a guy like Chris Adams. I try to tell people, I've been trying to tell them for a couple weeks now, since all of this news has come in on the recruiting front, there is a clear difference already from the FedEx NIL money that is already permeating through that program. It's very clear to me. We're talking about Memphis football recruiting similarly to the way that we talk about Tiger basketball recruiting, and that's never been the case.
Yeah, and look at it. I mean, I think the easiest place to start is look at the video that Kobe Miner posted on social media to announce his commitment. The beginning of the video is a FedEx plane taking off.
Right.
So it's very apparent. I mean, the FedEx official account replied with an eyes emoji to Daryl Miner Jr.'s commitment yesterday. So it's not a surprise that no one is hiding from it. But yeah, like you said, it's been different just the kind of player. I mean, Kobe Miner is a guy we know Alabama was after him. Michigan State almost had him. Mississippi State was after him. And Memphis kind of swoops in and they managed to get him. And it's just not something that we've seen in years past where you're able to do that. And they were able to do it with other guys too. You mentioned those other guys. It's like, it's not just getting one person who was coveted by SEC Big Ten programs. It's putting together a whole class of players. And I think they really transformed their defense in the past couple weeks with what they've done in the transfer portal. And it's just, yeah, you see it right away. FedEx, I mean, we know it already mattered with retention of some of the stars coming back from last year, but now we're seeing with transfers. And I think as we move forward in recruiting and we see what it looks like with high school guys in the next year's recruiting class, we're going to see it affect that as well.
So with the transfer portal, with what they already have on the roster, what are your big questions for this team heading into next year? I think a lot of people usually talk about O-line and secondary. I think the O-line, they have some guys. We'll see how they all fit in. But guys with a lot of experience, defensive backfield, same thing, but it's all got to come together. What are your questions, though, for position group by position group?
Yeah, I mean, defensively, I think I want to see how they line up. I mean, Jordan Hankins has talked about using a lot of linebackers. I think if it was up to him, he would play a 0-11-0.
Right.
And I think he's bringing in a lot of guys, right? Like, it's clear that linebackers are going to be important. The defense, obviously, Chandler Martin is going to be the key to the whole defense. But we saw how much he transformed that defense in, what, 7 practices for the Liberty Bowl game. And so what is he going to do with the whole offseason and with the ability to bring guys in to play specific schemes? So I think it's going to look a lot different than it did last year. I don't know if they even know now what it's going to be. I think it'll depend on personnel. He said that a couple of times. But that's a big question. And then I think, yeah, the offensive line, I think it's going to work itself out. But anytime you're going to have new, I mean, basically every position, we're going to have some of the same players, but every position is going to be played by somebody different than last year. And so I think it's, you know, chemistry-wise, it's going to take some time, and we'll have to see how that pecking order plays out. But those are the two main things, because a lot of the other positions are already set, or guys are coming back, or we know, you know, pretty well who's going to be in those spots. So I think a lot of it's going to come into the defense.
See, I was talking about this, and I'm glad you bring this up, about Jordan Hankins saying he wants to get all his good guys, which are his linebackers, on the field at the same time. I was talking about this on the podcast. I think it's going to be challenging to try to make that happen, because you have so much talent. I mean, we're talking about Matt Hudson, Chandler Martin, Elijah Herring. I mean, you just have so many guys. Rodney Dansby, who's a guy who had, what, 352 tackles in 3 years at the FCS level. Like, you just have so many guys. Like, I guess you could run a 3-4 or something like that. But I think in today's day and age, it becomes a little more complicated, because you have, especially in the AAC, you have these prolific passing offenses that you have to be prepared for. And that's why a lot of teams run a nickel or a dime, where you have, you know, one or two extra DBs on the field at the same time. It feels like it will be somewhat of a challenge to get all those linebackers on the field at the exact same time. But I do think that the rotational element that he has brought to the table with all these linebackers is something that will really help this team going into the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, I mean, you look at it, they lost Jeff Kanarku, obviously, who was a huge player, but Chandler Martin is coming back. And last year, those are the two main linebackers on the field, so you replace one guy with, like, 10. I think there's going to be rotation, but like you said, it kind of goes back to what we've been saying throughout the offseason of the secondary is the part that needs to improve. Obviously, Kobe Minor coming in is huge, especially because Diego Brumfield, who was a starter last year, cornerback, left during the spring transfer window to go to Mississippi State, so he needed to be replaced. There's some guys in that room where they're excited about. Julian Barnett has gotten a lot of praise throughout the spring, and obviously Davion Ross missed almost all of last season, and he'll be back. So there's reason to be excited about secondary, but that's the unit that needs to improve from last year, because there were a lot of games where Memphis kind of got pinned back, and it looked like consistent 10, 15-yard gains through the air that were way too easy for opposing offenses. And if this team wants to compete at the highest level, like it obviously does and has aspirations to go to the playoffs, you know, you just can't have sequences in games where they're consistently moving the ball, getting chunk plays. And so obviously linebackers will be important, but I think, you know, getting that pecking order kind of narrowed down throughout fall practices is going to be one of the main storylines leading into the season.
Now, something that I saw that I found a little bit interesting, Action Network about a week or two ago put out their preseason win totals for all the AAC teams. And the Tigers at the very top, like they have the highest win total. But it's at 8.5. What do you think about that number? I feel like based on what they have coming back, what they have added, it feels like they should get through that number in particular. It feels like, but they bottom out at 9 for the most part. Obviously, things can change, injuries can happen, and you know your plans get ruined and foiled. But just looking at this team at full strength, relatively healthy, feels like they should get past 8.5.
Yeah, it feels like it. I remember seeing that and thinking, yeah, two things. One, okay, they're picking them to basically win the conference, right?
Right.
To the win totals. But then, like, you know, if they went 9-3, like, that's probably, even if you win the conference, that's probably not going to be enough to make the playoff, right?
Of course not.
You have to think that somebody is going to be 10-2, especially if it's someone from the Mountain West. Like, that would probably be better. So, yeah, I thought that was weird. I think, like, 9-3 would mean losing. Memphis is probably going to be favored in at least 10 games, probably 11. So if you go and you lose some of those games, especially if they're the teams that people consider lesser, which, let's be honest, are a lot of the teams that Memphis is playing in the AAC, then people are not going to be happy. So I think a 9-win season, obviously last year it ended well, and the win against Iowa State really helped with momentum and how everyone is feeling going to next season. But, and it's crazy that these are the expectations. This is the level that we're at right now with Memphis football. But it's almost like a 9-win season is like, you know, is that what we wanted?
Beat who you should have and lost to who you should have as well. That's what last year was. Like, 10 wins didn't really excite all that many people until we actually got to the bowl game. 9-3 was kind of everybody sort of raised their noses up at it. And I understand why, because of the conference and the lack of strength in it.
Yeah, but I think in this season, looking at the schedule, right, I mean, there were games last season, like Memphis was an underdog against SMU and against Tulane. So at least it was like, okay, well, we lost to a team that, you know, was favored to beat us. Memphis is probably going to be favored to beat all these teams now, like going to play at USF, going to play at UTSA, and at Tulane. Those are not easy games. The Tulane game, maybe, depending on how their season goes, they could be favored, but I would expect Memphis to be favored in all the other games. So even 10-2, you're looking at, or even 9-3, you're looking at you lost one of those games where you were favored in, and I think in the AAC, like you said, people are just not going to be happy with that. So it's a super high bar, though, when you think about it like that.
Now, I have sort of noticed, like, CBS Sports, my good friend David Cobb joins me every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He did, you know, Group of Five coaching rankings. He also did Group of Five rankings. And you see in the Group of Five rankings, Memphis is at number 3. If you see, you know, Bill Connolly's story in ESPN, you'll see Memphis is his favorite to be the Group of Five representative in the college football playoff with 12 teams. So you'll see that. The team and the program are viewed in this positive light. Hey, this is the year they could take advantage. Now, Ryan Silverfield, on the other hand, is kind of interesting. I was looking through CBS Sports Group of Five coaching ranks. He's at 13. My buddy David Cobb says he had him at 19, put him at 19. There is a difference between the view of the program and the view of the coach in this particular instance. I think I understand it, though, for the most part. I think it's pretty understandable. Before last year's 10-win season, we're talking about 6-6 seasons, regular seasons, heading into it.
Yeah, but I think when I saw those lists, obviously that jumped out to me. I think the reason, in my opinion, is it's kind of like with the records and with projections, you're projecting, okay, this team is going to make the playoff this year. Whereas with the coaches, you're more, what have you done so far?
Yeah.
And so if Ryan Silverfield goes to the playoff this year, I think we can all agree that
he'll be higher
in that list, right? Yeah. And especially like anyone, the perception nationally, if you don't follow these teams that much, you see, okay, this is the team that went to the playoffs. They probably have a pretty good coach. Whereas now you might know Jimmy Chadwell, you know, because he took a team to New Year's Six game last year. And you might not know a lot of these other coaches. So I think that's part of it. Whereas people are looking at this roster and they're saying, well, this team should be the number one team to think about for the playoff. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's because they have the best coach, just the roster and the players and the continuity. And I think Ryan Silverfield will get plenty of plaudits moving forward, you know, if the season goes the way that people are hoping it does.
Yeah, no question about it. I'm talking with Jonah Dillon at the Jonah Dillon on X. He is from the Commercial Appeal covering Memphis football and the Grizzlies. Now, I will say this, looking at the, we have the Big 12, the ACC, the Big 10, all approving this settlement for the House versus NCAA case, the NCAA board. I think there's going to be a wrench thrown. I already talked about it with the Fontenot case or whatever it is. But it just feels like when we look at the University of Memphis, they take these steps. You improve upon your stadium and your facilities. You're getting that done. You find this NIL money that, you know, donors are going to put down and help you with, and you have a great relationship with FedEx. So you take that step, and now the next step is going to be revenue sharing. And it just feels like regardless of the steps they make, there's always that next step that they have to climb to get where they ultimately want to go in the Power Five. And I think that there's a lot of fans that look at it and just feel a little bit disheveled by that sort of situation and how it has always sort of unfolded for the University of Memphis and where they stand in athletics.
Yeah, and even, I mean, stuff changes so quickly. You know, I'm the first radio hit I did when I was in Memphis was on your show, and I was talking about how Memphis was going to play conference games against Oregon State and Washington State.
Right.
And that was less than a year ago. So, you know, these things just constantly, like, the benchmark shift, and you see all this stuff, and it's, if you're a fan, I mean, it's so hard. It's hard enough to just keep up with your own team, especially with the transfer portal, right? And then you're seeing these huge stories about the shifting dynamic of college sports and lawsuits and settlements and things like that. It's just exhausting. And even for Memphis, you know, you're trying to get into another conference. You don't know what these conferences are going to look like. You want to talk about lawsuits? I mean, Florida State and Clemson with the ACC. What is that conference going to look like? You know, it's one of those things where you can get into a conference and then the next year it can
look the Big East situation that unfolded and what led to the American.
Yeah, so it's like you don't even and kind of in the context of everything you just said, I mean, how surprising would it be if Memphis finally got into the ACC and then suddenly all those teams were out of it or something. So it's hard to know. Right now we have a Power Four. We thought that there would ever not be a Power Five. And so it's just crazy. And that's why, I mean, I always go back to this, and I think I will more so going into the season. But, like, we just have no idea what college sports are going to look like. We have no idea what the playoff with college football is going to look like. All we know is that for this season, the Group of Five is guaranteed a spot in the playoff. We have no idea if the future of that's going to be true. And Memphis happens to be really, really well-positioned this season for that. So it's great timing in that sense. And that's one of the reasons why this season feels so important, because, yes, Memphis has those aspirations and could be the number one team to make it as a Group of Five. But 2-3 years down the road, we don't even know if it's going to be an option. We might look back on this season and say that was the only time where Memphis actually realistically had a path to the playoff. And so it kind of always goes back to that. And I think that'll be something throughout the season that we kind of hear the want to make the playoff and the want to win the AAC championship this year could be more important than ever.
Yeah, and then the idea of that has been thrown around with, you know, revenue sharing and the Power Four continuing their upward trajectory while the Group of Five gets left behind. There's been the thing thrown out about a Group of Five championship and then the Power Four championship. What? Let me just sort of throw this by you. I know that, you know, most people have the same opinion on this. How do you think that would go over, a Group of Five championship? Like, when we watch FCS playoffs at times. We watch any football we can get during the fall. I get that. But it just strikes me as something that if the Group of Five put their heads together and this was the idea they came up with, I think they're definitely overhyping the products that they have.
Yeah, I think we would get to the end of the Group of Five playoff, and whichever team won, we would then just argue about if they would win against whoever the best power player or any Power Five team.
Do we get to
and
claim, like, national championships like UCF did?
Right. It's like we have the opportunity to, if we end up there, it's going to be like, well, we had the opportunity with the playoff like it is this year to know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, like, we've seen these teams, you know, we've seen Group of Five teams play, and it doesn't always go well. It didn't go well for Liberty last year. But when those teams compete, I mean, UCF, what they did for those couple years, it was amazing. And, like, that's what sports is all about, right? So Boise State, like, everyone likes to talk about Boise State, Oklahoma. Like, you're basically saying you don't ever want that to happen again because, you know, you're embarrassed if you're Oklahoma. That's one of the best sporting moments of all time. And it's because, you know, they let a team have a chance, basically. And they saw what they could do. So,
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.